2, 3, 4.
I think a good teacher is someone that comes to school not for the fact that they're getting paid and they come to school for the student.
It's a boy thing.
What I think makes a good teacher is a teacher that's willing to connect with their students, make an effort to get to know their students.
It's a boy thing.
Like when the teacher's approachable and you don't feel intimidated when you go up to talk to them.
It's a boy thing.
Bags, there's literally some kind of weird on-way going on with me. Like, here we are recording another podcast. I still haven't edited the last one. And it just, normally it just happens. Like, I just get home and I do the edit and we listen to it and we check it's okay and it goes out. That just, like, what do you do when you know you've got to do something and you've committed to it and then you don't do it? I bet that's actually never happened in your life.
Yeah, I don't know if I have the luxury of not doing this.
I knew you'd say that. I knew you'd say that's never happened.
I think the thing is, though, don't feel shame, but acknowledge probably all of the things you've had to do. You know, all the things you've got on, like you were on that class trip.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I can, but they all sound like excuses.
But if I look at the start of our year as well here, we are feeling that we've had to do possibly more admin-y tick box tasks than we've ever had to do before. It certainly feels like more than last year. So I don't know if the same is happening at your school.
I can't even say that. Like, actually, this school is remarkably kind of minimal in admin. Like, for example, the report that I have to write for the board is about a page long. Like, honestly, there's a lot of things that other schools, especially state schools, kind of turn into massive enterprises that they just don't really labour here. So no, I used a word like on-way, which is really just a nice French term for laziness.
You just don't have your mojo.
And I've had time to do it, but I still haven't done it. I think that one of the things that probably sits behind it is I've had a few quite complex situations to deal with in relation to my personal life. And maybe even though they don't necessarily take a lot of time, they somehow drain me of my, well, I guess, mojo. Like I just, yeah, like I feel like I'm always in recovery mode, even though I've actually got time. Like I can't, I mean, I'm talking to a person who has young children. I literally cannot compare in terms of busyness, but it's just attitude, basically.
No, but I think it comes back to at times, and, you know, it's having that discipline. We talked about that, didn't we, for our students, but sometimes it can be blimmin' hard to find. You know, I'm trying to find my discipline for exercise again. Oh, shit, having to dig deep for that one. So that's okay. No judgments here. I mean, and you'll end up doing it, and then there'll be two podcasts that go out and people will get the gems.
I do trust that. And I guess you and I can trust that about ourselves with exercise too. Like, we have returned to exercise more than once in our lives, and so you know you get there in the end. And it is a thing about not berating yourself too much. I guess, like exercise with you, I'm not used to actually having to dig this deep to get something done that I'm just doing of my own volition. That's a weird nexus to find yourself in.
I want to kind of say it could be old age.
Oh, my God. The only time I ever really look at myself is when I'm in these conversations with you, and I'm always shocked at how old I look. It's like, jeepers, when did you become older than your father?
But you've got a flash denim suit on, so
compensating for it by buying directional clothing, yeah. So we were going to talk today because we've both got this phenomenon, and I can't remember the last time I had this. I don't know how long it's been for
I can
you.
Tell you when.
Okay.
I can tell you when. I can give you dates.
Okay, well, this phenomenon happening to us both is that we've got an unresponsive class.
Oh.
I'm on the verge of shouting at them. It's like, why is nobody speaking?
And they're beautiful humans. Like, yeah. You can have really epic one-on-one conversations with them, or they come into your classroom and they're buzzing with each other, but then you sit down and you start it and you want to have a discussion, and then it's like crickets rub their legs together. In fact, there's even less noise than that.
Yeah.
And it's awkward.
It's utterly silent. You're describing my class exactly. I mean, it's a bunch of outstanding individuals. And, like, they're doing their work too. You know, like secret squirrels getting their work done and handing it on time.
Yeah.
But it's like no one will open their mouth in the room. I mean, I think in the past I've wondered if there's a bully in the room, if that makes sense. And everybody's scared of putting their head above the parapet because of the potential consequences for that. But then, of course, I just think, am I the bully in the room? Like, is it me?
Well, a colleague and I are having this situation down here as well, and it's driving us a little bit mental.
Yeah.
So I took it actually to our department meeting yesterday, and we had the most amazing, basically a 45-minute discussion around ways that we could change possibly our pedagogy. And yeah, the colleague did say, maybe I need to do more chalk and talk. And I was like, well, that's death by chalk and talk. Like, you might as well, I'm just going to die if we're chalk and talking, because I just can't do it. And we also know that in order to do well when you get to particularly level 2 and 3 of English, levels 2 and 3 of English, you need to be able to express your ideas. You need to be able to be quite strong in your thoughts. You have to be able to articulate well verbally, because that will mean that you can articulate well in a written context. But it's also that just exploring other people's opinions, hearing thoughts. And if we can't do that, well, what sort of classroom are we sitting in?
And there are even those concrete pedagogies around social construction, especially for English, where they need to be able to not just discuss with us, but also with each other, in order to just find out what they think. It's often the first step towards coming to a fuller understanding. So, yeah, we have to get the discussion going. It isn't really optional. And honestly, neither of us are got into this job to have a group of students replicate our ideas. And so it isn't going to be a flyer. But I realised that what I've been thinking about too, be really interested to hear what your department says in terms of their solutions, because the solution has to be pedagogy. I realise that I rely on the fact that there must be a large number of people with confidence to join that conversation in a classroom in order to spark that. And once it's sparked, everyone kind of gets involved. I've started using a randomizer. In fact, I use that Class Dojo because I think it's so funny, because it's a primary school thing.
Yes.
And it randomly selects monsters with each kid's name on it. And then it just means that it's selecting, not me, but it is selecting students to present. And it allows me to check that everyone's giving a contribution, because I can tick off their name when they have. And so I'm making sure I'm touching everyone with a little bit of required contribution. But it's still really forced. It's still really forced.
Yeah. And I think that's the interesting thing. Some people go in at the start of the year and they assert expectations around conduct and behaviour, and then the discussion might come a little bit later and there's the reflection upon, well, am I asserting too much expectation around how to behave appropriately, and it's shutting the kids down. But then when it comes to the discussion, they're not going there. And it's like, on the flip side of that, I go in from the get-go and expect conversation to be flowing. I am sitting in this zone of I'm unsure what to do. Where we got to at the end of our department meeting yesterday was, let's observe each other. Let's go in and see, are there things that we're doing that maybe we need to shift and change?
I feel like I definitely have strategies I use to promote discussion, which are still up my sleeve. Things like a class debate, for example, where you put up a controversial topic, line them up on either side of the room and take turns at arguing against each other. And and bringing mischief and fun to that, like rewarding silliness, like giving points for silliness and that sort of thing, and just kind of actually really legitimizing that social engagement. I feel like I could experiment with some of those approaches, which might loosen things up and provide that kind of template for a more relaxed and discursive engagement in the classroom. I haven't done those things yet, so they're worth a try.
Yeah, I think pathway to observation or for observation is good too, because it'd be interesting to see what the person sees. But the thing about it is, one of the colleagues yesterday did say about the great debate, similar to what you've said, that was one of their things to say, maybe do that, or and then they get the argument going. What about they said putting them on a continuum, like how much do you agree with this or disagree, and then they have to share their viewpoints. Then I did like also this colleague talked about they have their list of class expectations and sort of rules, but expectations, and one of them is number 3 is, I think it's, you've got to ask questions, like you, I can't help you unless you help yourself. I'm paraphrasing, that's not exactly what they said, but that means that then if they're not willing to ask questions, the students aren't willing to ask questions when they're unsure, then that falls on them. So that colleague is really setting up this environment of you've got to be participating in your learning. And it's, they seem to have success with it. Again, we do know that when it comes to these things, this is not actually refuting what my colleague's saying, but sometimes, you know, you just have the dynamics of the classes just don't seem to...
Well, that's got to be that's got to be the case. It's got to be the particular combination of personalities in the room. I mean, obviously, because this is such a rare occurrence for both of us, our classrooms are highly dynamic. And so when you strike a class where the where there's just silence, crickets every time some kind of request for input is made, I honestly think that's a social dynamic that somehow emerged as a result of the people in the room. It's just about the actions to take at that point, isn't it? I mean, obviously, I take it personally.
You feel wounded.
Yeah. Come on. But, tell me out here.
Don't leave me hanging. Can't you see that it's like I'm dying up here?
Exactly.
And kids usually do come in and rescue you, but again...
But not this class.
Or if it's 3 out of 29, which is kind of what I'm experiencing in one class, because I've got a couple of classes that are really quiet this year, then 3 out of 29 is not enough. I'm just going, oh, hell's bells. I did try this morning with one of my classes, getting them to give me their response to the text that they've read. And if I had just said to them, okay, give me your response, I know that they wouldn't have opened up. So today I did a different approach for myself, which was, okay, I called each student and we had to move around the room. Now, again, that's not something I would do, but then they were quite engaged in that. They were quite comfortable here when I called them each individually and we just went around the desk arrangement.
Yeah.
And they were good at being able to then sort of expand on their ideas when they said something and I gave them the look like, oh, I don't get that, or can you go further? And so they did, and that was a nice job, and I felt like, whew, okay, this is better, but it was still having to put...
So structured, yeah.
Yes, so structured that it doesn't feel easy as well, and it possibly doesn't feel good for the kids. I'm not sure. It doesn't feel that comfortable.
But it's quite interesting. I was away for a couple of days on a field trip, I mean, geography field trip. I got to go because I drive a manual, but it was awesome. So I set the class as sort of one of those relief tasks that sort of is self-contained. And they had to present it afterwards to the class, which was the accountability part, to make sure they actually did something while I wasn't there. And I just wondered what I'd get, to be honest. And actually what's been interesting about this particular class is that those presentations are great. So I wonder, they're so great that I wonder if they're a bit scared. As in, you know, they're so great that I'm feeling like they were scared for them not to be great, if that makes sense. And so I...
So that pressure, the expectation on themselves.
And of course, you're not necessarily going to detect that as a teacher if the kids are terrified of letting you down. It's not always easy to see that. So it was another... thought I had was that perhaps I've actually, because it's still the beginning of the year really, that I've created a bit of a risk-averse environment in the classroom through the setting of high expectations, and that they're actually worried about revealing any flaws, which you often have to do when you're engaging in a discussion. So I wonder if I might also start bringing through mischief some encouragement for play. Like, that's why using that class dojo thing, the play part of it is you can redesign it so that you can reward anything, and so you can provide a reward system for stuff that you wouldn't normally reward in a classroom. Like,
you smiled at me today.
Exactly. Or does that make sense? Or someone's wearing their, you know, they did an excellent knot on their tie. Whatever you want to reward, you can reward. Someone complimented me on my new suit. They get a reward.
Yeah, they get multiple rewards for that.
Right. And if someone uses Schadenfreude or does spoilers, they lose all their points.
Yeah.
So like gamifying, bringing mischief in, but subtly using it to promote the kinds of dispositions that lead to good learning and also good engagement in class discussion. I think I could use a technique or a mechanism like that, which is the sort of thing I think I'd offer to a newer teacher who is trying to do that. Is that there are structures you can put in place, but I feel like I need to offer it to myself. Because it's, you know, what I'm doing isn't working.
And Sam, this is one of the points that was raised in the department meeting yesterday. Like, it has to come back to in the end if we want to stimulate these things. It's our pedagogy, so we're going to have to flip things and do things differently if we want to create this environment. It was also talked about, one colleague has that kind of playfulness, I guess, like, you know, it's going to be every third person today. And they do a random thing to select the person who's number one, and then they count three on from that. And or it might
Use prime numbers, can't help myself.
And that they might also choose someone like, oh, you've got the longest hair today, so you're starting us off, you know. And again, there's a bit of that playfulness and that sort of setup as well, you know. Maybe you've got the best tie, the whatever in the room. But again, it's just seeing how you can play with these things and if it will make a difference. I can tell you the 2 years that I can recall where I had these situations. 2017,
all right,
with a level two class, and
so I was. And 20, we were working together then.
We were, and 2022. Sorry, I'm not good with dates. 2023. A level one class. And it was hard yakka. Those classes were hard. I didn't change my pedagogy. I did probably a little bit more at times where they could work by themselves individually, but I still expected the discussion. But man, what a long year.
So we've got to fix this now, don't we? Because I don't want a long year like that.
You don't want a long year, and I think we're going to have to try these techniques that, like what you've suggested. I'm interested to know how the playful dojo thing is going to work. I did my start this morning of individually, you know, each name and then going around the room, but, you know, maybe I'm going to have to do something more like the popsicle stick that Renee used to.
We used to hassle her so much for her popsicle sticks.
Renee and your coloured popsicle sticks with kids' names on them. But maybe I'm going to have to do popsicle sticks. I don't know. Or I do a random name generator and then we do that. Yeah. I would like it to be an intrinsic thing from the kids, though. But I guess you're going to have to set it up, as you're talking about, kind of an extrinsic motivation to get it going from the get-go.
And so, I think that's the thing, is that if it doesn't spontaneously happen, you've got to do something to make it happen.
Was an interesting comment yesterday as well, and something we've been reflecting about. What does the landscape look like in other classes? Is discussion happening? Is it essential for the students to own the ideas and challenge them as they must in an English classroom? Or is it simply a regurgitation of ideas and facts or whatever? Well, and also, how much are devices affecting students' ability to engage in interpersonal skills and communicating?
I would perhaps start thinking like that if this was happening across the board. But we're both acknowledging this is actually quite rare.
Do you notice a difference from your year nine boys to when they turn into senior boys? Like, do they suddenly develop these inhibitions and they lose their sparkle?
No.
Well, you're just not fun to engage with on this because of you.
Sorry, I'm not helpful at all. I was thinking about what I'm like, though. I was thinking about you, like something that no one knows about you unless they've actually been in a classroom with you is how hilarious you are.
Oh, I'm really not. The boys think I'm embarrassing.
Yeah, you are hilarious. You're just ridiculous. And no one knows, because it's not a side of you that a lot of people get to see, but your students get to see that. But the thing about that is that it will only come out when you're feeling good and safe yourself in the classroom. And actually those silent classes don't feel safe for us as teachers. Like, it actually feels there's quite a lot of self-criticism going on, and you're feeling kind of like you're failing as a teacher when there's very little response. And so I'm wondering about myself, is that because I'm getting very little response, I wonder what that does to my disposition. I've got a massive resting bitch face, I'm sure that's what's happening, is on my face I'm looking probably angry as far as they're concerned. Like, they'll be reading anger. And actually, I'm not angry. I'm just freaking out. Why is nobody answering my question? And so, again, probably that humour and mischief, whether it's the kind of, well, you know, all the things teachers do, always embarrass them. But it's almost like I need to bring that forth, even though I'm not necessarily feeling it, because they need it from me to shift the tone, and they're probably reading the cues all wrong at the moment.
How did you set up the relationship stuff at the beginning of the year? You did your letters.
Actually, no, that's interesting. That one class, because it was a journalism class, they all wrote profiles of each other.
Ah.
I don't know if that makes any difference.
It could.
It's not an intimate thing because, of course, when you're responding to that, you're responding to the person that wrote the profile rather than the person that it's about. And yeah. So, weird. Maybe I'll return to those.
Did you share anything about yourself with the
person? Yeah. No, I always overshare, I think.
Okay.
Did you?
Okay. I know. I didn't this year.
Ah.
So that's an interesting thing.
So you might be a little bit inaccessible to them.
So, yeah. So they wrote letters to me, and usually I would do a chat about who I am.
Yeah.
But I haven't done that with any of my classes this year. And I can't tell you why I didn't do that. At the time, I just felt like they probably don't want to know.
Yeah, let's get on with it. But it is interesting, isn't it? Because they do seize on to those little bits of information. Kind of builds a character for them to interact with.
Mm. Well, I'm interested to see if we can make a change, because at the moment, as I said, it's going to be a very long year. I don't believe in spoon feeding. The students have to participate in the learning.
Mm.
They've got to bring themselves into it. That's a crucial thing of English. And if I become a chalk and talk and spoon feed, then I'm doing them a disservice.
I think I might loop back, though, to that point about us. We're also the icons in our departments for the raising of standards. And we do know that our reputation counts. And our reputations are good, but we've also all got reputations for being tough. And so I wonder if sometimes that reputation can spill over into a little bit of intimidation. Not us intimidating them as individuals, but us being an intimidating presence that they have to kind of manage. And they come in, they don't know us, it's the beginning of the year. I think there's a possibility, certainly for me, that I just need to make things a little bit more safe for them. Mm. So that they start to volunteer their contributions.
I think it's also really fascinating. I don't know if you're teaching boys that you've taught previously, like in this journalism class. Have you taught any of them before?
Don't think I have, no.
Ah, right. So for me, I have now got four classes that are all new individuals to me.
Yeah.
Apart from in my level one English class, where I taught two of the boys for drama last year.
Yeah.
But that's all these new students that have no idea who I am. Mm. They may have heard about how I roll or not.
But they probably have heard about you. Like, you're coming in not as a new person, but as a second year in the school. Your reputation will come forward with you. It'll be interesting to see what they're. I mean, I think some of this might come out through the observations that you've suggested.
Yes. Yeah.
There's a good chance through that there will be. That the observer will pick up on stuff. Certainly with the observations I'm doing, I'm spending a reasonable amount of that time having chats with the students, asking them questions about how they're finding the teacher, asking the students to give advice to the teacher that I can pass on and things like that. And it's been quite good. They've been quite honest.
I quite like that second part of that, though, like that you observe them, but then the students are giving like their voice. I like that.
Being a third party, I think they're they're obviously generous, and I think that's good. I think the teacher who's being observed needs generous feedback, but they will actually give advice if you ask for it. Like if you say, you know, is there anything that you could, any advice you could give her, him, in order to improve, in order to be a better teacher?
Mm. Oh, no, I like that. I think that that's really good, because that just feeds into how we're looking to approach this. And I guess it is a departmental, it's not a goal. Like, I'm not saying I've written it in the goals for the year or anything, but it is something that's of importance to us, and we definitely want to get things humming. So I quite like that.
We can report back on how we go. I need to go now.
Well, have the most wonderful lesson, won't you? I'm guessing they sound noisy, so I'm thinking it's not the class that doesn't talk to you. So
it's not the silent class. You're absolutely right. I might start calling my silent class the silent class to their faces.
That could either go one way or the other. Let's see how that goes.
You can see that it's that kind of judgment that led to this situation.
Okay, good luck.
Yeah, cheers for that. All right.
All right, see you soon.
Lovely to chat. Bye.
It's a Boy Thing, a fortnightly chat about teaching English to boys with Gina and Chris.
It's when the teacher doesn't treat the students like their students, like they treat them like they're kind of like colleagues.
I think what makes a good teacher is clear set deadlines, good communication, willingness to like go over topics that some of us might find confusing.